My name is Tyler Fornes, and I am one of the co-hosts of the Good, the Bad, and the Hungy AEW podcast here on the Voice of Wrestling Podcasting Network. We take a broad scope approach to the world of All Elite Wrestling and the entire universe of Tony Khan. We talk about the big matches, the big stars, the promos, the storylines, and we also look at it from a big picture perspective. How are things going to change over the course of the next 10 years with AEW still in the picture? How are companies like WWE going to adapt and adjust to AEW? Are they going to be a similar way like they did with WCW in the late 1990s? Will there be a counterpunch? We talk about all of that and more on The Good, The Bad, and The Hungy every week on the Voices of Wrestling Network.
Do you like wrestling trivia? Then check out the 5-Star Match Game, the Pro Wrestling Quiz Show. I'm Joe Gagne, and every episode, I grill 3 contestants with 5 rounds of power-packed wrestling trivia. We have over 30 evergreen episodes in the archives covering WWE, AEW, Japan, Mexico, and much, 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 much more. Play along at home and check it out today.
This podcast is a member of the Voices of Wrestling Podcasting Network. Visit voicesofwrestling.com to hear the rest of our great podcasts, as well as show reviews, columns, opinions, and updates across the world of wrestling.
Welcome back to another episode of The Good, The Bad, and The Hungy here on the Voices of Wrestling Podcasting Network. I'm your host, Tyler Fornes. And with me, as always, is Fred, the Scrabble champion. How are you?
I'm doing all right, buddy. How are you?
You know what? Life is pretty good. Wife's birthday was yesterday. Ate some kick-ass sushi. I had this roll. It was called a Phoenix roll. Are you a sushi fan, Fred?
I am a sushi fan.
Oh, sweet.
I'll go right ahead.
Okay, so it was shrimp tempura, avocado, and cream cheese.
Okay.
And then on top of it was seared tuna and spicy mayo. And it was a tremendous roll. Nice. Might be my favorite sushi roll I've ever had. As you can tell, I'm a very Americanized sushi eater. But we did have some yellowtail like sashimi that was tremendous. Overall, just really, really fucking good. And yeah, wife had a good birthday. We did those little. Do you have lime scooters around?
I'm familiar with them. I think there's mainly birds around here.
Okay.
Well, I think yeah. We're a couple years past the peak of scooters in Lexington.
Yeah, they were fun. They go about 10 miles an hour. My wife just wanted to cruise at like 5, and I'm just like, I'm just gonna zoom. She's like, go zoom. She wanted to look at the houses by the lakes that we'll never be able to afford. But yeah. It was a lot of fun, and now I'm excited. The dogs are chewing bones, which is a big step for them. We've had marzipan about 3 months now. And toys and bones have been a little bit of a sticking point for Odie, but we're seeing progress. And now I'm excited to talk some wrestling.
Yeah, man, it's been a hell of a week for wrestling. I still haven't even got to Dean 2. Been working on my CMLL catch up. I'm almost all the way through February. You know, we really are in a special time of wrestling just globally. Just a lot of great stuff going on. And I don't know, it's a blast to take some time and check as much of it out as I can.
No, I completely agree. I think it's going to be a lot of fun to kind of continue looking at some of this stuff. And I'm really excited about the future of wrestling, and we'll talk about that later as we get into our 30 for 30 list and really talk about some of the AEW candidates and how we kind of view them. We'll also talk about Double or Nothing, which was one of the best American pay-per-views of all time.
And the timeliest pay-per-view review possible.
Yes, WWE stands are mad about it. They're so mad they're finding little critiques just to
I thought
their likes.
I thought that there are a lot of them pretty positive about it, frankly, from the little bit of chatter I've seen. I don't spend much time in social media, but
Oh, you're not really on Twitter anymore. It's all the Twitter people.
Real weirdos.
Yeah, the uber weirdos, like the JD from New York, finding anything possible to shit on. It's so funny. Yeah, but we'll talk about that. But I want to start off with this week's Dynamite and talk about a couple little things.
A show Adam Page I have not watched yet.
Adam Page mentioning that it was the men's world title, I think, is a first. Maybe it's been done before, but to my recollection, it's the first time it's ever been called by one of the wrestlers the men's world title, not just the world title, which has kind of just been the vernacular forever, where it's just a world title, but if it's a women's world title, it's the women's world title. So I found that very interesting. It's probably nothing, but Hangman has always been a very inclusive character in wrestling, and I think a lot of that translates to the human because of how he conducts himself publicly. He's a very inclusive individual, so I thought that was really interesting. But the one thing I thought we really should talk about, Fred, is the botch from the Kyle Fletcher Adam Cole match, where Kyle Fletcher just missed an apron powerbomb. Missed it. Adam Cole's head grazes the edge of the ring, which thankfully it was just a graze. And Dave Meltzer even went out as far as said a lot of people in AEW were really pissed off about that because of all the head injuries and concussions that Adam Cole has suffered over the years. I think from like a fan standpoint, I think a lot of people are overvaluing it. They're using it to push agendas. Look, it was a botch. It sucks. You know, there's going to be, or either there was a stern talking to Fletcher, like, you can't do that. You have to understand where your aiming points are. You have to really take care of the people in the ring, because that's the deal.
Okay, I just saw it. That's pretty.
Yeah, it's bad.
Not good, bro. Not good. Oh, God.
This is also something that's very out of character for Fletcher. He doesn't botch.
Yeah.
He doesn't do that kind of stuff. So, personally, I'm chalking up as a one-off. I don't really see it as anything more than that. And if it was more than that, well, then I think we'd have a broader conversation. Like, if this was an individual just botched all the time, I think we'd be having a different conversation here. But
yeah, this isn't exactly. I think Mr. Kennedy got a lot of heat back in the day and kind of killed his WWE push because of botches. So I'll get with that. But I will say that either Cole grazed his head, which could have been a lot worse, but sucked, or he just outright got like fucking pumped on the mat, which also sucks. Like, there's no good option here. I'll say that much. Damn. That really sucks, man. Would not like to have that happen to me.
No. It's a really rough one, but yeah. I'm also just going to chalk it up to shit happens. Eat at Arby's. Like, yeah, it doesn't feel intentional. It happens in
wrestling. It's unfortunate.
Yeah. It doesn't feel intentional at all. And some people might point to the fact that Fletcher just right after just sold the move like a cocky shithead. Well, that's his character and that's what he's supposed to do. Like, that's what the plan was after that spot. So I don't really have an issue with it. Obviously, Adam Cole seems to be completely fine because they did the angle after the match. He finished the match with seemingly no issues at all, but concussions can also be finicky. Symptoms can show up like a day later. So hopefully everything's okay. We've heard nothing of the sort to say that he isn't okay, but hopefully this is a really good learning experience for Fletcher and we don't ever see this kind of thing again, because that sucks. You have to take care of the other person, and he blew it, but we've seen way worse. We haven't seen Fletcher make this kind of mistake, so hopefully it never happens again. Like, we've seen people break their necks on incredibly simple spot. Like, it doesn't happen.
Did Hiromu just break his neck on the Rana? Is that right?
No, it was the Phoenix Destroyer.
Okay, yes, it was more complicated. Okay, I couldn't remember. I just remember, like, knowing that in real time I just seen a man, like, live break his neck. Amazing they could even finish that match. Yeah, I think a little bit of the discourse around like buckle bombs has gotten kind of over the top, but I will say that I'm not really opposed to the idea that maybe we should stop doing buckle bombs and apron bombs, just because those are kind of shitty spots to take. It's very hard to know where you are, and I as a person taking the move, and I could see that making it more likely to injury. I think some, like, I remember Brian Alvarez had a little meltdown about like a month ago, and I think maybe that was a little too much, but I do think it's not necessarily the worst idea to stop doing them either. I can't really disagree with that. I mean, frankly, if we're just doing the move as a pre-commercial transition, like, we probably cheapened a dangerous move or relatively dangerous move to the point that it doesn't have much value. So why take that bump, if it'd be like taking the, like a burning hammer, and just using it as a transition move. Like, at some point you got to be like, okay, maybe we don't need to be this liberal with bump taking. And Cole does have a history of concussions, of course, which is concerning with, an additional potential head injury. I haven't seen anything, at least, about an actual injury, but being announced yet. But yeah, hope he's okay. And I do think that I'm not like, I think sometimes people, you bring up the subject of maybe we should ban a move for the wrestler's safety, and people get really defensive about that. And I think sometimes you should have a genuine assessment about, the safety of doing a spot. I just feel like we shouldn't dismiss that out of hand.
Yeah, it's I'll say this, and I've said it before, like about chair shots and all this kind of stuff. If the wrestlers are comfortable doing it, they get the risks. They understand everything you just said, Fred. They understand that it's hard to aim. It's hard to see where you're going, but they're supposed to know. And I would go this far. If you don't feel like you can trust them to do the spot, then ban that wrestler from doing the spot instead of like an overall kind of sweeping thing, which is what like WWE did for years with pile drivers. The only person who could do a pile driver was the Undertaker, or Undertaker and Kane. Like, that was it. So
yeah,
if you trust the wrestlers to be able to do the right thing, just let them do it. It's their bodies. They get it. Tony Khan's not going in there and saying you have to do a pile driver every single night. You know what I mean? Like, that's
right. Yeah,
that's his.
But I can't get on board with the, well, the wrestlers know the risks, so whatever happens, happens. I can't get on board with that. I do think that there's like chair shots to the head. I think generally should be banned, just because I think they do way too much damage to someone. And you have better options of handling them or doing something along those lines. So I don't know. That's just my take on that.
Yeah, it's interesting, but I'm just chalking up to it's a wash. It just they'll handle it internally. I think we likely won't see this kind of issue happen again with Fletcher. And if it does, we can have a much broader conversation. But I just think people are making a mountain out of a molehill here. It was a botch. It's pro wrestling. It happens. It didn't look to be malicious.
It sucks.
It sucks. Learn from it. Move on. Like, if somebody, if Bron Breakker made this kind of botch, I think we'd be saying the same thing. Because, potential-wise, they're around the same. If they're in the same bucket. Like, it happens with young wrestlers. Just fix it and then move on.
Yeah, I concur. Next item.
Mariah May has been removed from the AEW roster page officially, and Fightful Selection's reporting that she is on her way to WWE immediately.
Does not surprise me. It felt like this was the most likely outcome. I think she'll fit in well in WWE. I think she'll be a pretty good fit here. But man, it looks like PW Insider is also reporting that she's likely gone to WWE. I think AEW will be fine. Not like her presence wouldn't help or anything, but I also don't think that it's crippling. You know, it's probably a good fit, and apparently it's been like a lifelong goal for her, so makes sense. You know, I'm not terribly surprised.
Mm-hmm. I think Mariah May came in, did a phenomenal arc, and they used it to make Toni Storm a megastar in this company.
They did. It worked out great for them.
Incredibly well. And Mariah May does the job, and that's it. She gets to move on. I think that kind of movement in wrestling is good. I wish we would get to see more of that. But I think people are too worried. And, you know, Vince McMahon may be gone from WWE, but there are still a lot of people from that era, mainly like Triple H. When you have somebody like Jeff Jarrett, who kept bouncing back and forth with WCW and WWE, I think some of that may still be ingrained with some of the old heads where that might be a concern. You know what I'm saying? So I think it's good to see this kind of movement. I also think she can come back at any time and still be a star. So we'll find out how that kind of manifests. But I'm really excited to see how this plays out for her. I'm excited to see how this plays out for WWE. And overall, it's you can't really be mad.
I hope she shows out better in WWE than she did in AEW. I will say that I never thought she really had matches as great as her reputation until the blow off with Toni Storm. But I mean, she carried herself like a star. She has promo ability. I wasn't super into her act, frankly, but I mean, I think she'll be a good fit.
I do too. I really do. I think that's pretty much it for the news. Fred, let's
Abaddon has left AEW. Her contract has expired. Their contract. Sorry, my apologies. The pronoun. They are. I think that they had a big opportunity with the Julia Hart feud about a year ago, and it fell through pretty atrociously. Terrible pay-per-view match, frankly, by the AEW standards. But I will also say that this past WrestleMania weekend, they had a very good match with Sonny Kiss on one of the GCW. I forget if it was the Effie show or what, but so that was impressive to see. I didn't think that match would be much, and both showed up with their working boots on, and I think Abaddon in particular looked pretty good. So maybe she'll find herself a spot. I think that the kind of reworking of their gimmick into away from the zombie and more into like not sure how to describe it, but it's a different, slightly different vibe that, for the Sunny Kiss match. And maybe that'll move away from like the worst of the we must book Abaddon like 1995 Undertaker, you know, which I think didn't help at all. But I think, you know, that I think that there is something there. Maybe they'll figure it out on the indies. Maybe they'll get a spot somewhere else and get some work. I'd love to see them succeed. I've always been intrigued by their abilities. I understand why they're leaving AEW, why AEW is letting them go, frankly. I get it. If you compare them directly, I think that they'd be towards the bottom of the depth chart of AEW's women's division at this point. It makes sense. You know, I'm not saying it's good. I'm just saying that's the facts of the matter.
Yeah. RIP to the yearly Abaddon Halloween match.
Yeah. Although, hey, look, we got ourselves 5 months. Never say never.
Mm-hmm. Look, no, her contract's up in June.
Yeah. Could always be brought in as a one-shot. I mean, Tony Khan's...
Oh, I get what you're saying. My brain was not computing.
No, it's all good. It's all good.
Yeah. Well, best of luck to them on their next step. I do think there's potential there, but it has to be unlocked. It hasn't been yet, which is why AEW's choosing to move on. But let's talk about one of the best American pay-per-views of all time. Let's just be real. Cage match, when I checked it, it's dropped. But it was ranked, I think, on either Monday or Tuesday as the 13th best wrestling show of all time. The only American wrestling pay-per-view above that, WrestleMania X7, which, understandable. I'm
pulling it up right now. So this is
I think it's dropped since then. I think it's dropped below All Out 2021, which is one of the greatest shows I've ever seen. And I was lucky enough to be there live. That ruled. What I found interesting when looking at that is the top two rated shows ever are the Brody Lee Memorial Tribute Show and the Hana Kimura Memorial Tribute Show. I thought that was really interesting.
Yeah. It is currently 14th at this moment on all events. It has fallen 0.02 of a point behind All Out 2021. And is also behind WrestleMania X7, NXT TakeOver New York, and New Orleans, if you count those.
I didn't count those because they were not pay-per-views. But yeah. I think the concept of what a pay-per-view is, I think you could count it behind them. It depends on what kind of semantics you want to use, because they were built up like pay-per-views. They were treated like pay-per-views, but they were on the network and not on actual pay-per-view. Then again, WWE pay-per-views were on the network at that time too. So I guess you kind of have to group them in that same bucket. So Cage Match has it, what, the fifth best American pay-per-view of all time?
Third or fifth, depending on counting those NXT ones.
Yeah. Those NXT shows were great. They were great.
Yeah, New Orleans is really good. I don't think I actually watched the New York one, oddly enough. No, I did. I just didn't rate the show, which would have probably been a 9 or a 10.
Which New York one is that? Was that the one where Gargano won the belt?
Yeah, off of Cole in the best out of three.
Okay. That was a good show.
Yeah. All right. Yes, it was, looking at my batch ratings. All right, go ahead. Sorry.
Let's talk about the show, though. Fred, did you watch the pre-show?
I did watch the pre-show. A lot of it on mute because of the talking parts that I didn't care about. But I will say that I thought that the women's match was not good. And I thought that the six-man tag was pretty damn fun. I like that quite a bit.
Fred, you need to learn to count. It was an 8-man tag.
Oh, you're right. I apologize. I was trying to find it. Yeah, I thought that the women's tag was below average. I went 1.75 on it. It was kind of crappy. Anna Jay. Oh, boy. I don't know what to make of her. I forget. I think this might have been Mike Spears that said this. My apologies. It was actually Case Lowe or even Kelly Harris. But one of the three of them on two different shows, he referred to Anna Jay as the only wrestler in history who's ever gone to Japan and came back worse. Can't really disagree. Apparently, Harley Cameron got hurt in this match, was written off of TV this past Wednesday. Harley is still green as grass in the ring. Obviously, is a superstar with anything just showing her personality. But as far as in ring, it's woof. Bane is a powerhouse, but like that's about the extent of her ability. And Penelope Ford is a professional wrestler.
Man, I had a lot of hopes for Penelope Ford. It just didn't happen. And being that she's already 32, I don't think it's going to happen. I think this is just kind of is what she is. And I know there's been a lot of like ageism discussion with women's wrestlers. I'd say the same thing about a guy. If you've been doing it for this long and you're 32 years old and it still hasn't happened for you, it probably won't. Now, there's always that slim chance where you can, but
I personally don't really cut anyone off fully until they're like 35, as far as like, well, this is more or less your ceiling. But Ford just has not progressed from where she was 3 years ago, I think. And that's the most difficult part. And I had a conversation. I was on the most recent episode of Jumping Bomb Audio with Kelly Harris. And we talked about the 30 under 30 list, amongst other things. And Penelope Ford came up. And as did Anna Jay. I just don't think either of those two have really improved much since 2022, say. And I think that's a big problem with AEW is unless you're like a real top of the card worker, like a Kyle Fletcher or a Tony Storm, you aren't getting enough run to help you improve. And I think that has led to stagnation of the growth of some other workers, like those two. Those are probably the two most prominent. I think Top Flight has also stagnated. Granted, they're at a much higher level. But still, like, I am concerned that Top Flight's just going to be, like, a better version of Private Party. And Private Party, you could refer to as well.
Yeah. I don't know. I still find it weird that Anna Jay went to Japan and got worse. That's wild to me. I mean, she's what, 25 years old still? So, like, she's got.
She is very young. Yeah.
I found it interesting that Harley Cameron is already 31 years old.
Yeah. Just a. Yeah, very. How long has Cameron been at? Let me pull that up. Her first match. Oh, she's only had 73 matches. That shows. Okay, I understand. Yeah, she is still stupidly inexperienced. Started at 28. Look, her worst case scenario is she's a Top Flight. I mean, like a pretty damn good manager, I'll say, who can wrestle once in a while. If that's the worst he can say for, if that's her worst outcome, then I think you can still classify her as a sort of success. And yeah, I just hope that she does improve in the ring because it'd be great to have her as like a legitimate women's main eventer. I worry that maybe she'd be better fit for WWE since that promotion just does not care so much about match quality. I have caught up on pretty much all the recommended matches for Raw over the past 2 months. And in fact,
why are you doing that to yourself?
Well, look, I take my voting on the FSM 50 very seriously, and I do think there's good workers in WWE. It's just that the promotion doesn't care about match quality most of the time, which is frustrating as hell. But I have relaunched my Patreon. Let's give this plug in as I try to plug it, or try to log into the wrong account for the second time. You can go to that at patreon.com/flagrantwrestling. But in the past couple days, I've wrote two posts. One was just me talking about basically my thoughts on a CMLL match, the Team Torion, Team Guartaro school tournament back on February 18th, and also Julia and Roxanne Perez against Io Sky and Rhea Ripley from the May 12th Raw. And then I sat down and I looked at the last 2 months of Raw on Cage Match. And for a long time, as we know, Cage Match had an influx of pro WWE partisans who would rate a lot of WWE stuff like way higher than I ever would. But basically, the gist of it is that over the past 8 Raws, 35 matches, only 8 of them reached 7.5 or better on Cage Match, which I equate to about 3.5 stars, and only one of them broke the 8.0 barrier, which was on the most recent Raw with about half the number of votes of what you'd expect them to top out at. So you wonder if that one's going to drop down below that. So my point being is that it just doesn't matter WWE, and I worry that Harlan Cameron may end up there because I know how she'll be used, and I probably won't like it as much as how she is currently being used, even with her lesser quality matches.
Yeah. All right, let's get to the show, Fred. We've already been talking for 30 minutes, and enough.
No, Lord.
That is not what the show's about. Let's start with the
opener. The show is about paying me money to read my stuff. $5 a month.
Go pay Fred. He's worth it. Let's talk about the show. And opening match, Mercedes Moné defeats Jamie Hayter to win the Women's Owen Hart Memorial Cup. And this match ruled.
Yeah.
It was a great not match. It was nothing what I expected. I thought Hayter would be more of a bully, more of a physical dominant wrestler, because that's kind of what Mercedes thrives with. But this was way more back and forth and equal than I thought. And the finish, I thought, was tremendous because I didn't think it was a DDT. I thought it was a botch. But it was a botch that worked perfectly for the match.
Because,
it looked brutal. She got face planted and then the roll up. And then Mercedes sold it like $1 million, sprinted up to the cup like she knew she got out of there with one. It kept Hayter strong. It didn't make Mercedes look weak. And this was just really, really good. It was not the style of opener you usually see from AEW on these pay-per-views, but it worked really well. I gave 4.25. I thought it was awesome.
Yeah, I like this match a lot. I also gave it 4.25. Hayter, I think, has fully got her juice back. The big question is going to be, can they keep her in the mix and feature going forward and not lose that momentum? That's the biggest concern I have with her in AEW at this moment, because she struggled since her injury return for so long because she wasn't being featured. They weren't using her smartly or anything. And so they finally gave her a solid push through this tournament. And, you know, the fans bought back into her, and they just have to not, like, bench her again at this point. They have to keep her going. They have to find her something to do, because you can't just let her flail around, you know?
Yeah, and they did start to give her something to do right away as, was it Tekla? Is that how you pronounce it?
I think it's Tekla.
Okay, because they pronounce it like Tekla.
Okay, well then maybe that's more appropriate.
Yeah, I don't know. I'm not a Joshi person. So, but she's immediately transitioning to something with a brand new wrestler who, having spoke to a couple people who do watch Joshi, they told me that she'd be a good mid carder. And the women's mid card does not have enough talent in it right now. So I'll take that. I'll take that as a win. And Hayter can get her established. Her gimmick is like she's the spider. She moves pretty interestingly, like how like you would expect like an actual spider to move with some of her like jerky movements, the quick twitch. So I think it'll work. We'll see. The transition to American wrestling for some is really difficult. For some, it's much easier because of the style of wrestling, because it's television based. It is less about they do focus on the crowd, but it's more about focusing it for the camera, focusing it for that kind of thing. So I'm intrigued to see what it looks like. I'm intrigued to see how this progresses forward. But I kind of wanted Hayter to win, and I thought you could make an argument for her to win. But, man, Toni Storm and Mercedes Moné feels like a huge match, and I'm excited for it.
Yeah. Yeah, I am very excited for that match. I think it'll be great. We will see on Tekla. I think she's a little underwhelming in Stardom. Like, not bad, but just did not separate herself. But I reckon we'll see how that goes going forward and all that good stuff.
Second match. FTR defeats Nigel McGuinness and Daniel Garcia when they get Nigel, or sorry, was it Nigel that passed out? No, it was...
I think so.
No, it was...
No, it was Danny. Danny, I think, did.
Danny. It was Nigel that kept going in there. But I
loved it. Yeah, and kept getting hurt.
I only gave this 3.5 because I didn't think it like peaked super high. God, you could have dropped this into 1987 Jim Crockett, and it would have been tremendous. Yeah. Like, this was just so good.
I thought this was a pretty good match at 4 stars. I think, man, one big issue with this is I just don't think Nigel is sufficiently over. And I also feel like Daniel Garcia has cooled off dramatically in the past half year or so. So that's a big concern I have. But I think FTR is just fantastic. And I think that they really helped elevate this to a high level. Still like just getting into notebook range, but still, you know, getting to 4 stars.
I love the finish of this match. And I agree with you on the Nigel thing. This AEW fan base does not know Nigel like the old AEW fan base would. We get it. Voice of Wrestling gets it. But they lost a lot of us when they did the Brochacho stuff. And it's been, and they've been able to stabilize, but the newer fans that have come in aren't those kind of fans like we are. So, and I don't say that as an insult. That's just more of kind of what they're reacting to, what they like. And Nigel just is not over with them like he is with us. So I think there's some merit to what you're saying, but I love the finish here where they have Daniel Garcia in the submission and Nigel keeps trying to come in and Cash just fucking kicks him out of the ring. And then does it again. Like, heels don't need to always cheat. They can just be assholes.
They can just be, just assholes that win a match, yeah.
And I thought it was tremendous, but it did not enthrall me in the same way that the rest of this show did. It was just...
That's fair.
Really good, really solid. No complaints. And good stuff. Good stuff. We'll see how this grows. I'm guessing we'll get something on Collision. Next match was the stretcher match where Ricochet defeats Mark Briscoe, and this ruled. This was awesome. I think one of my favorite spots that I've seen in a long time, Mark Briscoe gets the bottle of Windex and shines Ricochet's head, was just so funny. But this match, it was obviously a Sabu tribute match. Why they chose the stretcher match, I'm guessing, was because of the stretcher match he had with RVD in 96. But it was just great. They used the goofiness perfectly. They, like, some of it's just stupid. It's super gimmicky. It is what it is. But I thought they maneuvered it well. I thought the work was really nice. You get the, I think... Mom, didn't Mark Briscoe do a froggy bow onto the stretcher?
Yeah, so that was the highlight part of the match for me. That was amazing.
I just thought this was really good, really well worked, and Mark Briscoe just looked like a bloody mess, which is perfect for a stretcher match. I guess 4.25+. I thought this was awesome. you can easily get bogged down by the goofiness and the bullshit of a match like this, and they didn't. They kept it pretty serious, and it was a really nice surprise to see the kind of success it had.
Yeah, this I was concerned because this has traditionally not been a successful gimmick over the past 25 years, gimmick match, but it was really good. It was excellent, in fact. I went for flat on it. I did think it lost a little momentum towards the end, but I mean, Mark Briscoe busted his ass. I mean, Ricochet is fantastic. So, between, you know, I mean, it's really hard for those two to have a bad match. I can't imagine it happening, frankly. Yeah, I like this a lot. It was a little too goofy at points, but other than that, I think that it was a damn good match, so I enjoyed it.
It was a very good match, and it was a good lead up to what we had coming later, because what we had coming later matters here. As the next match on the show was the AEW World Tag Team Titles, Hurt Syndicate defeat the Sons of Texas. Look, this was the worst match on the show, and it was completely fine. It was more of a vehicle to continue the Hurt Syndicate storyline with MJF and kind of creating a little bit more distrust with MJF and both Bobby Lashley and Shelton Benjamin. It was good. Just a good, solid pro wrestling match. And I really had no complaints with it. Like, if this is your worst match on the show, you're doing something right. I think I gave it 3.25. It was well worked.
Yeah, it was probably their best. I think it's been their best pay-per-view match, but you can also make the argument that they are now 3-for-3 on pay-per-view with having the worst match on that pay-per-view. I don't know if I necessarily agree with that, because I thought the Moxley-Swerve Strickland main event was not great on Dynasty, and I hated the whole Moxley coat match and then the Christian Cage cash in and everything. Like, I thought that was worse. But I mean, look, the Hurt business aren't going to have the best matches. They're going to be good at the other aspects of wrestling, and I think they're a positive addition to AEW. Yeah, I thought this was a perfectly solid match. Absolutely no chance in hell they were losing. Like, the Washington Generals had a better chance of winning than Sons of Texas in this match. And, Lashley's good at being a power guy, and Benjamin can still go in the ring. And, you know, I may be the last guy on the Sammy Guevara train. I still think he's a talented dude. And, I mean, Dustin's really good for, like, his age and mileage, so... Yeah, I think this match delivered pretty well. So I don't know what else to say there. It just was not great. But good.
Yeah. I agree. I thought this was just solid. I mean, I wish they would have promoted more about the Sons of Texas being the ROH Tag Team Champions. I thought they could have done more with that, but they didn't. That is what it is. But yeah, just solid. Really no complaints. In this next match, I definitely have no complaints about is Kazuchika Okada defeats Speedball Mike Bailey to retain the Continental Championship. Fuck, did this rule.
Yeah, we finally got a high-level Okada match. I feel like it's been a hot minute since that happened. Bailey is having a great year. I think I've got him somewhere around 10th in my FSM 50, like, early tracking. Barring something unforeseen, I think he'll be an easy feature guy on that list. Yeah, just a lot of, I mean, really good stuff. I will say that even when Okada is kind of half-assing it, is that he sells really hard, like almost all the time, I think. It's the offense with him that I think kind of will falter. But Bailey is on a run right now. He's putting on really great work. And I think it's really cool to see. And I'm glad that Okada stepped it up for the show. It'd be nice to see that more often. But here we are.
You could just tell that it felt like Okada really cared about Speedball. And he really likes Speedball.
He was invested.
He took a lot from him. He gave him a lot.
I think it's either he really likes him or else was like, has seen what Bailey has been doing and felt like, okay, well, I accept this challenge and I will meet you every step of the way on this night.
Yeah, I agree. I really like the finish of this match where Speedball is doing like the 450 knee. I think the 450.
The ultimate weapon.
Yeah, that one. 450 like knee drop or whatever. The ultimate weapon. And Okada hits him with a gnarly drop kick and then Rainmakers him to oblivion. They protected the Rainmaker in this company. I really appreciate that. It's reestablishing his killer finisher. Because for a while in New Japan, it was the first one isn't going to get you. The second or third one is going to do it. And it was more of a wear down style of finisher. So I really appreciated that. I thought it was really good. I thought it was awesome to see a lot of success in that realm. This overall, I just really, really appreciated this match. I thought it was great. I think I went 4.5. I loved it.
Yeah, I think, I also went 4.5 on this one. Great match. Just great.
I've got my dogs outside, and I can't trust Marzipan to not chew on things. But she's running around. She's got the zoomies.
Nice.
My dogs are the best. All right. This one, AEW World's Women World's Championship, Timeless Tony Storm versus Mina Shirakawa. I have absolutely nothing to say about this match. 3.75. It was fine. They did a really good job of trying to get the crowd invested in a match that everybody knew the result. It didn't really happen, but the work was good. And they kissed at the end, which, whatever. I personally don't care. But look, they wanted to have one last defense before All In. It was Mina Shirakawa. And it was fine.
Yeah. I thought this was an okay match. I went 3.5 on it. I think Shirakawa has the charisma that you want to see. But at this level, I don't know that she has the ring work. That's not saying she's bad, but she's not exactly choose your top level worker in stardom. Saya Kamatani, Tom Nakano, Starlight Kid, et cetera, Izumi. I think that, there were a bunch of better workers. I think she'll fit into the U.S. better. But I frankly rather see, I don't know if I'd say I'd rather see, but, it'll be let me rephrase. It will be interesting to see what her status is in 6 months, given the recent history of maybe Sakura, Riho, and Hikaru Shida, who I think are all probably at least as good, if not better, in ring than Shirakawa, and have all been memory zoned at this point.
Yeah. Let's get to the real highlight of the show, though. Fred.
One. Two. Three.
Let the bodies hit the floor.
Things hit the floor. Let the bodies hit the floor. Let the bodies hit the
floor. Yes, and we had Anarchy in the Arena with the baby faces led by Swerve Strickland. Kenny Omega defeating the Death Riders and the Young Bucks. Oh, my God. I was getting really worried at the very beginning of this match.
Me too, man. Me too.
When Samoa Joe came out, I knew. I'm like, Samoa Joe's popping out of one of those boxes and beating somebody up. I can see it. I know it's happening. And he did, which was awesome. But you had Swerve coming out dressed as Predator, which kind of fit, but it was also like, all right, dude, this is Anarchy in the Arena. Will Hobbs and Willow Nightingale, they knew the drill.
Yeah.
T-shirt.
Everyone knew what was going on this night. Yeah. But yeah, I do appreciate the wearing jeans. Like, I am so glad they got the memo. And I'm also glad Katsuyori Shibata got the memo and chose Tim Dorian.
Shibata's just Shibata. They don't do this kind of stuff in New Japan. So,
oh man, Shibata's like, oh, we're going to have a wild ass match. I'll see you out there in my gear. Don't worry about it.
But, and then when Kenny's like, change the music, because of course the Young Bucks had to come out wearing.
Oh my God. I was so terrified at the start of the match because I was afraid there was going to be the like just really dumb comedy, you know? And I was like, you can't be doing this with like all these people in this ring. And then they didn't. So much happier about that.
No. It was great. And then when Kenny got them to change the music and it's like Twisted Sister. I'm so excited. And it's
no,
just
that's
like,
not Twisted the Pointer Sisters.
Pointer Sisters. I knew Sister.
Very different. Very different.
Very different. But then when they got he's like 2000s alternative rock music. He just sounds like boilerplate bullshit and it's Bodies by Drowning Pool. I'm like, okay. This rules, but there were so many great spots in this match.
Oh, buddy, there were
the swing into the speaker, Swerve coming out on a forklift, Swerve getting his tongue stapled, like Hobbs getting stapled in the back and then in the forehead.
No selling it.
Oh,
what a badass!
My biggest takeaway from this match, Fred, was the fact that. This shined a light on black wrestlers more than like WWE has done in decades.
Oh boy. I'm not stepping into that one, but I will say that it is very cool to see AEW have a bunch of awesome wrestlers of color and to feature them regularly. And I'm glad that that's where Strickland and Powerhouse Hobbs and Willow Nightingale all have this platform to perform. I got to step away for 1 second. I'll be right back.
Go ahead.
You go on about this match.
Yeah, it was awesome. I thought probably my favorite spot of the match was, well, I had a bunch of them, but Hobbs got the spine buster and Willow did like a rock bottom. And then she took down her overalls and they're both wearing the big black Din Jack t-shirts. I thought it was just tremendous. And I like intergender can get a little weird for me because, you know, hey, you don't want to hit a woman. You know, that's always been a personal barrier for me because, you know, you don't hit women. But I thought it was really cool that in this match, when it came down to brass tacks, it wasn't that like Moxley just gave Willow a cutter and it was just like, oh, you're the enemy. Fuck you. And they treated them, Marina Shafir and Willow, like equals. Kenny did have the spot where he was like, oh, do I give her the dragon? And she's like, do it, you pussy. And just kept slapping him, spinning on him. And he's like, okay. And then just gives her the Snapdragon. Like, I thought it was cool that they were treating them just like opponents. But they didn't do like a ton of spots. It was more limited, and Willow and Marina just kind of went after each other, which was also really good stuff. The Young Bucks. Oh, how great are the Young Bucks, Fred? Just what a phenomenal tag team the Young Bucks are. I can't get over the fact that they wrestled in Revolutionary War gear, one. And two, they were phenomenal. The entire match, the Pendulum Powerbomb spot was one of the more creative spots I've seen in a long time. They loaded up Kenny's mouth with thumbtacks, and they did the EVP trigger on him. Like, just there's so much great stuff here. I love the pendulum swing in of Swerve into the speaker. Then he comes out to save Powerhouse Hobbs from getting that EVP trigger. on a forklift. Like, this was, match was perfectly absurd. I thought it shined the most on Powerhouse Hobbs. And you can tell that Moxie just loves this guy, because Moxie brawled with him the entire match. It was great. One spot that somebody caught with a camera in the crowd that when Bodies was playing, Samoa Joe got involved when they're doing like the 1, 2, 3, 4 in the song. I thought that was pretty cool. And the ambulance came back when Game Kid came out, and then Mark Briscoe comes out and saves the team, and they load up all of the Death Riders into the ambulance, and they have to get Joe out because he's just beating ass. Like, that's perfectly in character for Samoa Joe. It was perfect for the theme of the show, or the match. And then they finish off the Young Bucks in the ring, Omega and Swerve. I thought it was just perfectly paced, perfectly well done. I thought on rewatch it got better because you see things that you maybe didn't see before because there's so much going on. Easy 5 stars. Competing for my match of the year right now with Tony Storm and Mariah. Just tremendous. Fred, you're muted.
Good job, me. I had to figure out which mute button it was on. I have like 3 of them. Jeez. So I'm setting up a trap for an idiot, which worked. Yeah, I don't know that I have too much more to add to this, just because it was just such a wild match that trying to sum it up is impossible. Like, if you have not seen this, you absolutely need to go see it. It is a really unique match. I think it is arguably the best Anarchy in the Arena going back to the original. It was just a lot of fun. But it was just a blast. And, you know, maybe it's not for everyone because it is a certain kind of match. And I know that some people don't like that kind of thing, you know. But I think it was just, this one worked really well. Not all of them have worked great, but I feel like this one worked fantastically.
It worked great, Fred. I loved it. Better than last year's, better than I think it was better than the Eddie Kingston coming down with a gas can and a lighter to try and set people on fire.
Yeah.
It was just so good. And I love that they're leaning into this kind of stuff, because WWE could never do this. TNA could never do this. Promotions in Japan, maybe Freedoms could do it, but never on this level. They can't do this. This is what AEW can do well. Lean into what makes you better, what makes you unique, what makes you good. And this kind of stuff, this was so well built. I hope we get away from just doing Anarchy in the Arena at Double or Nothing, because, oh, it's that time of year again. Maybe do it at, like, All Out next year, because, hey, we have a match that we can build up to this point. Like, I'm a big fan. I think it's tremendous. And they made it happen. But moving on, next match. Good match. I have absolutely nothing to say about it. Cooldown matches absolutely suck ass. Paragon versus the Don Callis family with Kyle Fletcher getting the win. And then Tanahashi comes out.
Yeah, what a weird combination of people to come out for the big faces. I want to say that I thought this was a pretty good match. It was 3.5 stars, but when did as in my mind stops working, sorry. When did they start doing cooldown matches? Because this is not something they've always done.
They've done it on and off for a long time. It hasn't been every single pay-per-view, but they have done quite a bit.
Yeah. Okay, fair enough. I just seem to
remember. The last one I remember was, I think they did it at Revolution. The cage match, the break, and then the world title match.
No, Revolution was just the steel cage and then the Moxley versus Cope. Now, there's a joke that Moxley and Cope was a cool down match, but that's beside the point. At Dynasty, they had the Omega Bailey Ricochet match right before the world championship. So, not those two cards, I wouldn't say. Forbidden Door, they had Kid Omega right before the main event. World's End, they had Okada Ospreay right before the Moxley four-way, which I hated. Yeah, I don't know. I feel like it's been quite a while since they've actually done that. Like, maybe you could say Wrestle Dream last year, when it was Briscoe against Jericho, right before Moxley versus Danielson.
Yeah, it... And it would have been just fine.
Yeah, it's really unfortunate. But, I mean, I thought this was a fun match. It felt more like a Do It on Dynamite or the pre-show or like two matches into the show kind of thing. But maybe they did it because they were concerned about cleanup from Anarchy. That's the only thing I can reason.
Yeah. All right. Let's get to the main event, though. And it's the Owen Hart Men's Memorial Tournament Final. Hangman Page defeats Will Ospreay in about 36 minutes to win, and he will go on to face Jon Moxley at All In. This felt like a Wrestle Kingdom main event, the way they pay, or a G1 final, the way they paced it, the way they made everything matter, the way it just felt like two of the best in the world going one-on-one for a huge-ass prize. It was great. It was phenomenal. Fred, I loved it. I loved this match. It was, everything was intentional. Now, the table spot, the fact that the table botched really sucked. But, yeah. And yeah, they still did the dead eye on it. Whatever.
Didn't bother me too much that they did the spot.
It was supposed to be like a huge spot in the match. And yeah, it is what it is. So I went full five on this. I thought it was great. I loved the finish. They kind of did the Bryan Danielson thing. Or who did Danielson do it with? Was it Danielson and Ospreay, where they stood at the end of the, on opposite ends of the ring, and they ran at each other? Hidden Blade versus the Psycho Knee. And they kind of did that where it was Buckshot versus the Hidden Blade, but the Buckshot won. I thought that was awesome. I thought the finish where he just does the discus lariat and then jumps out and gets the Buckshot, I thought that was a great finish. It felt like it came out of nowhere, but it also didn't come out of nowhere because they were just going back and forth. There were so many great spots. I thought the Styles Clash to the floor was phenomenal.
Yeah, that was an insane spot.
I think the best part of this match for me was the production. I think this is AEW's magnum opus of production. The camera angles of keeping it on one camera just throughout and letting the action come to it. The lighting, they made this feel special, and it was special. The production had just as much to do with this match coming off like it did as the wrestlers did. And that's not something we've been able to say about AEW production, because for the most part, AEW production has been very, very spotty. This was tremendous. And I don't think you could have asked for much more from these guys.
Yeah, I think this was a great success. I went 5.25 on it. I think it'll end up in my top 10. I do want to rewatch it, because as late as it was, I worry that maybe I was going off. So I don't know. Just want to double check my work on it. I will say that I thought this was a blast. I thought it was a great match. Some of the criticism I've heard, I've understood. I've heard Joe Lanza, on his review, referred to it as too long in the first two thirds of it, which I can see that as a fair criticism. So I just want to rewatch it before I really settle into my rating. and make sure that I actually do like it more than Anarchy in the Arena. But I do think it was a really, really great match.
Yeah, it was great. And a great way to finish up an all-time pay-per-view. And I thought the continuation of Hangman's story was really nice, where he goes back out and he shakes the hand of Ospreay. And then the promo he cut at the beginning of Dynamite was just tremendous. Real white meat babyface kind of stuff. He feels like he's back on track from where he was when he had the title back in 2022. And you had a little bit of a continuation with Swerve. Fred, I know you haven't seen it yet, but you should. Swerve comes out and asks him, because the Bucks said, "We cost Swerve the title for you, Hangman. You're welcome." Asked him, "Did you have anything to do with this?" And Hangman basically said, "No, I didn't. I would do it to your face." And more tension. Ospreay tries to fix it. It doesn't work. So they're building to something there. I don't know what that build is yet. Maybe it's something along the lines of Swerve getting involved in the match. I hope to God it's not, but we're getting more. And
yeah,
there's so many different ways to kind of look at AEW right now, and I'm excited to kind of see how it continues to build.
Yeah, I think I'm intrigued to see how all that goes. But you know, I just think that I don't know there was a wrong answer and who should have won between Paige and Ospreay. I do think I don't want to wait on Darby, I think, at this point. I think that unfortunately for Darby, I think Ospreay and Paige were just too hot to deny either. And I'd prefer Swerve to Darby at this point either. And I just think that it's time to shift the title, and I don't want to wait for Darby to get heated up for it. I think you can just have Darby slide into feud with Moxley like immediately after the title match. And I hope that we don't wait. I hope that we don't do this.
No, I agree. I agree. It's I'm glad that we have where we're at, but I don't want it to devolve into a bunch of sports entertainment bullshit. That's my big word.
Hopefully they don't. Because I do think at points that Ospreay and Paige are prone towards that, and I have had major issues with the early parts of the Moxley run, and you know, so there's some potential for bad decisions to happen here. I really hope we don't. But we'll watch it.
Yeah. Great show.
Yeah, fantastic show. Right? One of the best ever, I think. One of the best pay-per-views of all time.
And now, Fred, is the time where we can talk about our 30 under 30. Do you by chance have the AEW candidates
ready? I can give you a list. I could give you a list of them. I think I may have deleted some. So let me go.
Actually, I think I have the document. I should be able to pull it up, as we had an on-air production meeting that everybody loves so very, very much.
Great audio.
Here we go. 30 under 30 list. So here is everybody available from AEW. MJF, Daniel Garcia, Julia Hart, Kyle Fletcher, Tony Storm, Chris Statlander, Commander, Lee Johnson, Nick Wayne, shockingly, Riho, Wheeler Yuta, Jack Perry, Mariah May, Dante and Darius Martin, and Hook. That's a good group of wrestlers.
Yeah, not too bad. Go ahead.
I'm looking at my list. I personally... Kevin Knight is also should be on there, but he was listed under New Japan and not AEW when that list was created. So looking at my final list, I actually have six AEW wrestlers. Another one wasn't on there either. Megan Bain, who I actually have on my top 30.
Okay.
I'm very bullish on Megan Bain. You don't get many powerhouse women, and she's a good enough worker for being like, she's like Undertaker size for a women's division. She's a good worker for her size. She's not a great worker. But
with I'm holding off on her. I just couldn't fit her in with all the other Glenda candidates.
I mean, don't get me wrong. She's at 26. Like,
sure,
I don't have her super high, but I do really like her. I may surprise you who my number one is, Fred.
Well, let's talk about it. Who's your number one?
I have Toni Storm at number one.
Well, Tyler, if you had listened to the most recent episode of Jumping Bomb Audio, you would know that I also have Toni Storm as my number one. Despite the complaining we had at several points in the past year with her, I think past few months with her have been great. She's obviously over to a supreme level. And I think that she's pretty much a superstar at this point.
Yeah, she's phenomenal. I think it's like so much of this list is projection and star power, and we haven't seen, and you can try and say like Becky Lynch. No, Becky Lynch was not the face of WWE. It was always Roman Reigns. Like Toni Storm is starting to get to a point where you have to consider, is she the face of AEW?
It's arguable. I think the thing holding me back from that is I still do think the men's championship is positioned higher than the women's in AEW. Just, I think that's just how it kind of comes across. Not an endorsement, not really criticism, just a statement of a fact. But yeah, I mean, I think that she's super charismatic. Her promos are hitting right now at like a high level. I think she's undeniable. I think she can have great matches. She is still, I'd argue, a little opponent dependent. And so maybe, you know, I don't think that like this is a case of you have to rate her as number one. I can see why you wouldn't. Before the Revolution Ryan May match, which was great, absolutely amazing, like one of the best matches of the year, a five-star match. Her Grand Slam Australia match with Mariah May was pretty good, let's be clear, but also I thought just a four-star match, which, I mean, you know, the phrasing of just a four-star match is a little ridiculous, but, you know, and then we go down to, like, the Megan Bain match and the Shirakawa match which I both had a 3.5. So I think that you could argue that's the weakest part of her game, but I think she's still pretty damn good. I expect her match with Mercedes Moné to be really great. And I mean, obviously she's got a lot of charisma. She's very over. She's a great promo. I don't know if your criticism with someone is that like they're at worst a B+ across the board, except for in ring, and they're like probably a B there. That's really damn good. So yeah, I felt like she had to be put number one.
Yeah, I've been so impressed with her on so many levels. I will say I was higher on the Megan Bay match than you. I think I went 4.25.
Yeah.
I'm just so bullish on a woman that looks like that, who doesn't move like molasses, and has shown really high peaks in terms of work. I thought her match with Bozilla from WrestleMania weekend was tremendous. I liked it.
I thought, let me see.
It was a little rough, but it was
3.75. That was fun. Yeah.
It was rough in the right ways, because it was, Undertaker kind of had this too, where he didn't always work with these giants, but when he did, sometimes he was a little clunky. Like, Megan Bain doesn't work with women that big, neither does Bozilla. So when they faced each other, to me, that was really, really intriguing. And it gave me vibes of like an old school, like WrestleMania weekend match, where you got these really cool, unique matchups. And I thought it went off really well. It was just a power fest. And that's one of the reasons why I'm just so high on Bayne. I think she's got that in her. There's still things to work with. There's still stuff she has to learn and improve on. But she's only 26. She got plenty of time to figure that out. And she's in this women's division, AEW, starting to get really, really good. So I'm really excited to see that growth potential. I thought about Julia Hart on this list. Her in-ring work is improving. It's not great, but she's got a crowd connection. She's got charisma. She's got presence. The bell-to-bell just needs to improve. So she was like a final cut for me because so much of this isn't just about what you're doing now. It's about what you can be. And I do think she can be a real star in this division. But she needs time. She's only 23.
Yeah, she's stupid young. That brings up a thing I think we should discuss before we go forward. How did you approach this? Because we have a criteria, basically, of without having it. If you give me 1 second, I will have it pulled up. Just like the last few years, please consider wrestling skill, match quality, drawing ability, accomplishments, and long-term potential when voting. These are not weighted, and how you choose to evaluate and prioritize them is entirely up to you as the voter. So how did you approach it?
I kind of approached it like the Wrestling Observer Newsletter Hall of Fame, where all of these matter, but if somebody's really, really good in one, it can make up for levels like being weaker in others. Whereas the conversation we were just having about Julia Hart, I was a really big fan of so much of what she's able to do and how she's grown and this crowd connection and this presence and charisma. She's got all that down, but the in-ring work, the title match she had, what was it, against Mercedes? She worked so hard, and some of her stuff just didn't work, and she and Mercedes have bad chemistry. And Mercedes is known to have a clunker, too. That was a clunker. But the in-ring work is just nowhere near good enough to balance some of that out, so I had to use her as a final cut. But some of these, looking at my list overall, some of it's just I still have Nick Wayne at 12 because he's 19 years old and he could be like Will Ospreay. That's like the high end potential for what Nick Wayne can be. And he's already got such a great base underneath him that I think you can potentially realistically see something close to that. It's an individualistic case, but I didn't create an actual scale, but try to okay, everybody gets out of, it's almost like gymnastics scoring where everybody gives you 5.9, 6.0, but instead of different countries, it's different areas. And then you just kind of average it out. That's kind of how my brain was going through it. My number two is Kyle Fletcher, who I think is on the same level as what Tony Storm is. But from a men's division standpoint, he's so, so, so good. And he can do a little bit of everything. And I think having that balance for him was really important. But looking at some of my other ones, like Shun Skywalker, I have at 4. He doesn't really ever promo, but everything else he's got is just excellent. He can have the high-end matches. He's got a presence. A couple WrestleMania weekends ago, he didn't travel with any other Dragon Gate guys because he's a heel. Yeah. And he traveled the shows on his own. Just some of those things just hit really, really well. I kind of looked at it as an overall package, and you can be stronger in other areas and it be okay. That's how I looked at it. How do you view it?
I kind of prioritized at the top of my list people that I think have already made it, that are main eventers in their company, that are the center piece of their promotions. And I feel like that should be prioritized and really rewarded. So I have that kind of affected how I approach my top 10. Now I am still doing a little shuffling as we talk because I'm kind of I'm at the point where I'm really questioning some of my decisions. I will post my final list on the Patreon that I've launched of Flagrant Wrestling. So basically, I feel like everyone, definitely in my top 14 are like major stars in their promotions. And like beyond that, I didn't emphasize potential so much in my top 30, with my reasoning being I feel like you should reward a 28-year-old who's reached their potential versus a 20-year-old who you can see a path to greatness for them, but they haven't fully done it yet. And that's kind of my reasoning. Like, for example, I didn't put Nick Wayne in my final top 30. And you it's not that wow. I... Well, no, I just don't think that he is accomplished enough yet. Like, he's obviously going to be a great worker, but he has spent a lot of time on ice in AEW. And I haven't watched the best in Super Junior, but as I understand it, this year's tournament was pretty middling overall.
The whole tournament kind of was middling overall.
Yeah, like that's what I'm saying. Like, not Nick Wayne, but like everyone just did not show their best for mainly booking reasons, is kind of what I'm led to believe. So without Nick Wayne, like, just to give you an example, my number 31 right now is Masha Slamovich. I just dropped her out so I could put Hologram at 30. I don't think I can really argue that Nick Wayne has accomplished more or shown more in the past couple of years than either of those two. It's unfortunate, but you know, I had like a final top 50 that I had to whittle down to 30.
Yeah. It was a really interesting way to, like, trying to get this down. I will say my number 30, I think you'll appreciate this. Fred, it's Shota Umino. My vanity pick. And
talk about the fall from grace. I had to Shota Umino 51st on my list. I had him below like a bunch of, like, just the five people directly above him. I had Mariah May, Wheeler Yuta, Kevin Knight, Francesco Akira, and Nick Wayne. I mean, just no way I could put him in my top 30 this year. He had some great matches last year, but he's just also drenched in disappointment.
I had Shota, I think, I can't remember last year what my ballot was, but the first year we did this, I had him at 5.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a big fight.
I was looking for my old ballots today and I couldn't find them, and that's frustrating. Must be on my old laptop. But all right, go through your top 5.
Okay, Tony Storm is at 1, Kyle Fletcher is at 2, Gabe Kidd at 3, Shun Skywalker at 4, and Kaito Kiyomiya at 5.
Interesting.
I'm still incredibly bullish on Kaito Kiyomiya.
My concern with Kaito is just going to be Noah's booking of him. We had like one good year leading up to last year's vote, basically, and then they went right back to like pushing him into the cuck chair of Noah's main event scene. And it's really frustrating because, like, I agree with you fully. He is fantastic, and he's my number 10. I have no, like, I don't take umbrage with anyone putting him higher. He's obviously an amazing talent, but there's just so much screwing around with this booking over the past several years that, like, I worry that he's going to be ruined by it. And it's really frustrating because this guy should be like a, we should have, like, I'm not saying that it's a guarantee by any stretch, but like 5 years ago, if you asked me, I would have said that there was a decent chance, not better than 50% just because of how hard it is, but like let's say 20% chance, maybe a little better, that once he hit 35, we'd have a, should he be a first ballot Observer Hall of Famer at this point, like immediately, like we did with Okada a couple years ago. And I just feel like Noah is so determined to make him look as bad as possible that I think the best thing for him to do, and I proposed this on Jumping Ball Audio, is he should go to Mexico. He should, like, call up CMLL and, like, be like, hey, can I crash on your couch for 3 years? and then maybe jump back to New Japan just to reinvent himself. Because I think Noah just has no respect for him, and it's really frustrating, and I just worry about the damage that's going to do to him long term.
I don't disagree, but the high end stuff is still there. That Ozawa
match. Oh yeah, he's an absolutely great worker. It's through no fault of his own. It's just that he's consistently booked by people with no respect for him.
Yeah, and for what it's worth, I have Ozawa at 10. I'm a big fan.
Well, I got Ozawa at 9. I've seen, I think, one match of him coming back from Noah, coming back to Noah, I should say, and I was like, "Yep, I'm in." Like, this is this guy is a capital D dude. Just a really easy call. Yeah. All right, my top five? My top five. Okay, so Storm number one, of course. Number two is Sari. I think she's just undeniable as far as the in-ring force and as a drawing card in Joshi. I think that if you were to go to Marigold, it'd make a real difference. And I think if she were to go to Stardom, like, it really solidified them by a big margin as the number one Joshi company. But she is pretty much happy just doing her own thing, and I think that's cool as hell. Her produce shows are consistently, like, she's always having, like, 4.25 stars or better matches on those. She was one of my best wrestlers in the world last year. Easy call here. I went Saya Kamatani, number three. She has really improved when she stopped trying to be like babyface high flyer and went heel. I think she really figured out her game. And yes, I do have three women as my top three. She's great. MJF number four. I trust me, as someone that reviewed those Brochacho shows, I am well aware of the downsides of MJF when it comes to creative. I think it's fair to be critical of that, but I also think you can't let that overwrite the fact that not only is he a great promo and has great star presence and is a great heel, but he's also really good in the ring when he allows himself to be. And I think to not rank him at all, as I'm seeing some people do, is not great. I would not agree with that reasoning at all, personally. I think that if he were to jump to WWE, he'd instantly be like a top star there. I think, you know, he's just perfect for American wrestling, and it's clear he's going to be a star for the rest of his career, however long that lasts. Then I had Shun Skywalker at number five, the centerpiece of Dragon Gate. I have started to really like his work. I used to kind of not be super into him, but I have kind of gotten better with liking his work. So, yeah, I think of all the current dudes, I got him fifth. I think that's probably where I'm going to end up with him.
Yeah, the MJF one is so interesting because at a certain point, how much does booking really take a hold of this? You mentioned it with Kaito Kimia too. Like, MJF's Brochacho storyline is going to crater him in this poll. It just is. The Brochacho stuff was dog shit. It was universally bad. And if you take that out, like, MJF's like work through the CM Punk feud, Eddie Kingston, Jericho, like, some of the stuff he's done has been the best stuff in the company.
Yeah.
Like,
I think the frustrating thing is that not only did he have like a terrible storyline, but it really felt like it was pretty transparent that that was his creative. And I think you can be concerned that he is worried, or that there is worry that this Hurt Business storyline is going to be a flop, and so I get it, but like, I think he's just too talented that if he moves to WWE, where one assumes he'd have less influence on the storyline, then maybe not, I don't know, that he'd be a superstar there. So He still gets great reactions from the crowd. He's still obviously a star. I think most of the Virchachos think it's off of him with most of the fans. So there's that. But it's really, it's going to be like the biggest talking point, I think, when it comes to this list this year.
Yeah, I agree completely. It's really interesting. I'm excited to see what this list ends up coming out with, because it's going to drop here in a week or so. I think the deadline for all of us submitting ballots is June 3rd. So we're going to get some really interesting insight. Anything else on this 30 for 30 list that you haven't talked about that you want to get off your chest, Fred?
Let me see. I got Gabe Kidd's 6th. I think is undeniable. Mia Watanabe is 7th for me. I'm not going to go through the whole list, just before anyone gets freaked out. But like, she is so good in Tokyo Joshi Pro. I think that I worry that she's going to be overlooked because it's not Stardom, and if people only watch a little Joshi or whatever, then it's most likely Stardom. She is the centerpiece. She really like spent 2024 as at least as the centerpiece of Tokyo Joshi, and really was great, I think. So I'd like to see her rated highly and hope that she is, because I have her high. I have, let's see here, Rhea Ripley, 11th. My thing with WWE is they have very talented workers, but they don't let them show that. I think Ripley is a pretty damn good wrestler, and I think she's also very over. So I feel like she's, I hope she has to end up in the top 30, I feel like. Other WWE people, just real quick for me, my top 30, I only have two more, I believe, which is Bron Breakker and Javon Evans, who I have 16th and 17th. I really like Axiom and Nathan Frazier, but I just couldn't squeeze them in. Part of that is I don't know if either of them could really be, neither really jumps off to the page to me as a main eventer, especially in that company. I think that's going to be their biggest stumbling block going forward, but they're a very good tag team. And I also have Obafemi just outside my top 30. He's very intriguing. I would like to see him get better in the ring before I fully embrace him. But yeah, AEW wise, the only other people I have, I got Fletcher 9th, I got Commander 25th, and actually I've put Hologram above Daniel Garcia for my 30th spot. I missed up my counting here, but that's kind of a coin flip for me right now, because Garcia's gotten really cold, and Hologram, obviously I don't think he's been pushed as high on the card as Daniel Garcia, but I think he has way more upside as a worker, and I think he's got that charisma with the gimmick and everything, so I am more bullish on him at this point. One last thing I'll say is I've still got the Kingo in my top 30. I can't let him go. I've got him 26. I really haven't watched much of him since his return from injury. I heard enough about like how he's struggling with confidence and the return from the injury. And now he's going to WWE, or at least WWE, AAA, I should say. So I have concern about that, but look, if nothing else, like, he's just really just a spectacular moves guy, and I will always remember that Kenny Omega match is like one of the best TV matches ever. And so just love him, you know?
Yeah, I'm with you on Gabe Kidd. Gabe Kidd was obviously my number 3. A couple that I know I'm going to be higher on than most people. I've got Drilla Maloney at 14. I am just really bullish on Drilla, how much his presence has grown. He's reshaped his body. I thought the Shingo match from New Beginning was phenomenal. Like, I think he's got a really, really bright future. I think he could win an IWGP title. If they give him the Rocket Pack, I think the sky's the limit for what he can bring you. Daniel Garcia dropped from easy top 10 to 24th. I don't know if it's him. I don't know if it's the booking. And they just don't have anything for him. But I felt a lot better about putting Daniel Garcia on this list after the FTR match. I thought he was great. Maybe it's just they just don't have a lot for him to do. And that's kind of hindering some of that growth and development that we knew is coming. But I don't know. There's so much to glean from this that you really can't know 100% for sure. A lot of CML representation, though, on my list.
Yeah.
CML is in a great spot right now.
Oh, yeah. Really are. Yeah, very good. The highest I have for them is 12th, but I only have three other guys on my list, but there's a few that I just haven't seen enough to feel comfortable rating. Because I took last year off of CMLL, but I mean, it's this promotion is in a great place.
I've got 7 CMLL wrestlers on my list.
Nice.
Atlantis Junior's at 6. A lot of great
stuff. Oh, wow. Okay. I do not have him on my top 30 at this moment, but I'm rethinking it as we talk. Because I think he's going to be a star. I just don't know. I don't know who I can put him above. Maybe I'll bump Hologram for him. I think I probably will do that.
Yeah.
I'm doing that live on the air.
Great stuff. Well, that is going to be our show, everybody. Thank you so much for listening. Please give us a 5-star review. Tell us why I have better hair than Fred does, even though you guys can't see either of us. And pay attention to Voice of Wrestling 30 for 30. There's going to be a lot of great stuff on there. Until next time, I'm Tyler. He's Fred. God bless. Take care.
Take care, everyone.
Hello. Do you like New Japan Pro Wrestling? Are you a Shin Nihon freak? If so, check out the Super J-Cast with Joel and Damon on the Voices of Wrestling Podcast Network.
And even if you fucking hate New Japan Pro Wrestling, listen to the Super J-Cast anyway. Not just for our great show reviews, analysis, and pastrami sandwiches, but there's also usually some dick jokes somewhere in the obligatory opening 30 minutes of absolute nonsense we chat about every single week. That's the Super J-Cast for all the best talk about New Japan Pro Wrestling, crisps, and pornography.
Hey everybody, my name is Jesse Collins, and I am the host of the Gentleman's Wrestling Podcast, a show right here on the Voices of Wrestling Podcasting Network. On the Gentleman's Wrestling Podcast, we take a deep look at individual issues and stories that are going on in the wrestling world. Each episode is about a different topic, and we take a thorough and educated look at things ranging from current booking trends to breakdowns on individual performers and angles to investigations into different fan cultures across the industry. In addition, we keep a close eye on the wrestling media, and as a professional journalist, I bring a unique perspective to how current issues in wrestling are being covered and discussed through the wrestling media. We have a revolving series of guests from across wrestling punditry joining us on each episode, and we hope that you make the choice to give us a listen on wherever you get your podcast from.